Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
So whether we're talking about wildfire mitigation in rural America, New Mexico right now is suffering tremendously from it. Colorado did as well. To the reinvestments in locks and dams on the Ohio River or the Mississippi River to make sure that we can get the barges and the cargo moving up and down because of what we're producing in our farmlands.
Senior advisor at the White House and federal infrastructure coordinator Mitch Landrieu.
All of these things are critically important. In Louisiana, there's a lot of flood mitigation projects, whether it's the Great Lakes that need restoration in a lot of rural areas, or whether it's mostly off-system bridges that have really found in lots of rural communities that make it really hard to kind of navigate around the kind of terrain that we live in. Everybody's seen this from COVID. If you don't have access to high-speed internet and you're living in a rural area, you basically get shut out of the economy. So laying high-speed internet in every community in the country is critically important.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
In a normal sense, when you see stocks increasing in a country, normally that's a signal that, you know, there's excess supplies and it pushes prices lower.
Dr. Mark Jackanowski is the chairman of the World Ag Outlook Board.
In this case, you know, in Ukraine, stocks are high because those stocks are inaccessible to the market. So it's, we recognize, we've been able to track how much of last, we know we have a good sense of what size last year's harvest was, how much was harvested last year. So we have a pretty good sense of what went into stocks. And then we were able to, track over time how many of those stocks entered the market prior to the invasion. So then, with that, then that leaves you with a reasonably good assessment of what's left in stocks. And then the question is, as you said, trade grinds to a halt, so those stocks kind of remain in country. And then you have to start making assumptions about, how those stocks might leave the country eventually, if at all. What kind of capacity does the country have to ship those stocks out by other means, such as by rail? We know they've been trying to do that, but there's just no way to make up the volumes that would have otherwise been achieved by shipping over the ocean. So we're cognizant of all of that. And also just the fact that, things, that we, don't understand and can't predict. Could some of those stocks be basically taken by Russia and shipped back to Russia and enter the world market through those means? Or how much of the stocks that we assume are remaining in country might have been damaged because of the war itself and in terms of storage facilities that might have gotten hit and whatnot. So there is a ton of uncertainty, but just another case where we use the best intelligence we can and make these assumptions about how much storage capacity remains available and what the market has to do to get those stocks back into the market, and if at all, and what that might imply for next year's harvest, which again ultimately is going to have to go into storage at some point, and if it is also ever going to enter the world market. So just a lot of uncertainty there.
Dr. Joe Glauber was the former chief economist for USDA.
So this is going to sound counterintuitive, but I think markets actually are working quite well, all things considered. For what I can see, you do have countries that are highly dependent on Ukraine, and they are seeking buyers or suppliers, alternative suppliers. For what I can see, they're able to book that. The problem is at a very high price, and that's since the war began, we're seeing prices 20, 30, as much as 40% higher, depending on the commodity. And I keep saying, and maybe it's too glib, that we're not going to run out of wheat, that people will be able to buy wheat, but it's going to come at a pretty high price. Now, typically you think that, okay, those high prices, what's the old line? They're the cure for high prices, that farmers will respond around the world. I think the problem we see in the wheat market is the fact that 60% of the wheat that's traded in the world was planted last fall, right? So you really can't get winter wheat in the U.S. and the EU really to respond until the fall. So that means really next summer where those supplies would come in.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We also filed today in an effort to try to create more new and better markets for our farmers. The beginning of a process on our Packers and Stockyards Act.
At a Senate Ag Committee hearing last week, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
We start with the poultry tournament rule. There are two components to what we have disclosed today. The first is an effort to try to create greater transparency between integrators and producers, providing additional information to the producer before they enter into contracts. It's modeled after the FTC franchisee disclosure efforts, and it's really designed to help producers be able to better value the costs and risks that they're taking in entering into a contract with an integrator. It allows them to manage that risk by knowing a bit more about who they're doing business with. We're requesting that they, the integrators provide information concerning the number of placements and the stock density, a history of payments under prior tournaments so that folks can understand and appreciate where they might be in the process, a bit of information about the background of the integrator, whether they've been in bankruptcy at any point in time, whether they're involved in litigation, and the ability of producers to be able to share that information with their financial advisors and those who are providing them legal assistance so that they're in the best possible position to understand and appreciate the risk. There will be an exemption for very small live poultry dealers in this proposal.
Also addressed inputs.
We also have provided additional disclosures concerning the inputs that a farmer is receiving, both at the, at the time of placement and at the time of settlement. We want the farmer to be able to understand the breed, the facility that was breeding the stock, that they're being provided, the sex, the flock age, health issues that may have cropped up, and essentially at the time of settlement, understanding the distribution of inputs, the housing specifications, feed disruptions that may have impacted and affected the rankings. All of this is designed to avoid deception and to provide, again, farmers with the ability to understand precisely what they're getting into. 60-day comment period. We believe from our analysis that the benefits of transparency and additional disclosure exceed the costs.
And on other USDA efforts.
We also are announcing today a $200 million effort to try to help existing meat and poultry facilities. It's an intermediary loan program. It's going to provide grants to co-ops, other nonprofit organizations, public agencies, to create revolving loan funds to assist and help those facilities to remain in business. We're announcing as well a $25 million effort to try to expand workforce through our NIFA programs. We think this is an opportunity to expand capacity. This goes along with the additional opportunities that we announced in terms of additional processing capacity. We received 263 applications for the $150 million grants that are available. It totals about $895 million of interest. 46 states, 111 beef applications, 33 poultry applications, 69 pork applications, 25 lamb, and 14 goat. The projected cost of all these projects is roughly $5 billion. So there's obviously great interest in this program. And I might say in my remaining time, we also saw great interest in the Climate Smart Agriculture and Forestry Product Partnership Initiative. We received 450 applications, $18 billion in requests from all 50 states, a diverse pool of applicants, nonprofits, cooperatives, for-profit organizations, government entities, commodity groups, forest groups, tribes, universities, small and large corporations, a wide range of commodities involved. This is the first of two application deadlines. June 10th is our small application deadline. About $8 billion of additional leverage. So there's a tremendous interest in this program as well.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
I had a chance to do a tour out west here in the last couple of weeks. Started in Minnesota, went on across over to Montana.
The administrator of USDA's Farm Service Agency is Zach Ducheneau.
You see everything from producers that were in D3 drought last year whose land is too wet to plant right now, this late in the year, to ongoing extensive drought impacts up in Montana, where producers aren't even seeing any green up in the country.
So that's what's happening here in the U.S., but eyes are on what's happening in Ukraine. Dr. Dan O'Brien, Kansas State grain economist.
Probably, in my thinking, the reason as to why we're hearing so much discussion internationally about setting up grain shipment corridors and figuring out, now Turkey's trying to broker a deal to be able to move grain out and going through neighboring countries as opposed to going through the Black Sea, which is blocked up on a military basis. So they built up stocks over there from grain that they haven't been able to move from the last harvest. And now it's not too many months, especially for wheat. They'll start their wheat harvest, winter wheat harvest, about July 1st, and a little bit later than us, you know, a couple, 2 or 3 weeks in southern Kansas. So here they've got grain, it's been sitting at the ports, been sitting elsewhere, hasn't been moving, and now they got another crop coming on. That's a big issue. I think that you're dealing with such a moving target of issues, again, mined ports, mined fields in some cases, fields that have to be cleared, cratered areas. So for sure, the area along the coast of the Black Sea, except over into the down in the boot of that country, is southern boot, Odessa, et cetera, that's still controlled by Ukraine. But Russia controls a fair amount of the bordering lands along the Black Sea and up around the top of that country. It's interesting that that's not really where most of the agricultural activity is happening. Most of it's in the center and a little bit more to the west. But still, it's something that thankfully we don't have to deal with here. And that's just the physical disruption of a military conflict going on that stops up the availability of key inputs such as fuel, fertilizer being affected. And who sells most of the fertilizer out of that part of the country? Russia. So that's probably not acceptable. Anyway, the point is that, in fact, the key issue that Antonina started talking about is the ability that Ukraine had to move grain out. So that seems to be at risk. It's noteworthy that in the last week or so, there have been headlines from a UN Security Council group talking about the limitations on world wheat supplies, in particular grain supplies overall, coming about as a result of the Ukraine conflict. And now the worries about adequacy of food supplies, I think that's coupled with high prices. So a lot of players talking about this and trying to broker deals, figure out some way to gain access to what Ukraine has sitting in bins or and will have coming, just to make sure that different countries in the world aren't really stressed. I think the situations that I'm most concerned about would be those of countries that with high prices have spent a lot of money out of their treasuries or borrowed money to be able to get adequate food supplies for their populations. And now, given the economic challenges we have, you know, they're running out of funds to do that. So I'm not sure where the UN gets involved in all that, but surely between what we used to call PL480 funds, I think it's still program still around and elsewhere, to find out where the areas of need are and get grain to those areas in an efficient, effective manner is really important right now.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We have seen contract values fall off from the most recent highs. And, you know, we've had a lot of different things pressuring cotton.
Donna Hughes is an advisor with StoneX.
In the near term, there was a lot of investor money that had been funneled into the markets, and that does drive the action on any one day. And also, you know, as far as the front month July contract goes, you know, we're looking at physical business that goes on, you know, the mills, how much they're able to extend themselves in buying and all. And so, you know, we've kind of got two different scenarios that we're watching at this time with the front end July contract and then also what could be happening with the December contract as producers are planting or considering acres for this year's cotton.
The high energy prices are affecting man-made fibers as well.
You know, these synthetic fibers, you know, they're tied back to the crude oil market. And so with that being competition for cotton, you know, of course, when crude oil is trending higher, generally we do see cotton supported by that type of action. One other thing that we've had as of late is, you know, with the higher trending prices in cotton, some of the end users are going more towards those synthetic fibers. And so, you know, we've seen kind of a push and pull in regard to that.
And how is that cotton marketed? Well, Kevin Brinkley is CEO with Plains Cotton Cooperative Association.
We want to have something that we can offer for every grower to, you know, sell his cotton the way he wants to sell it, when he wants to sell it. So we wanted to have a really good marketing experience. And so for producers that, you know, given the weather conditions we've got right now, I think we'll have a lot of them that will actually just kind of see what they produce. And with prices being where they are, they'll probably go toward the cash market. And so that looks like either the SEAM, which PCCA is the exclusive provider of the SEAM in this area, and the SEAM offers a producer the ability to simultaneously offer his cotton out to dozens and dozens of all the major and even the small cotton buyers here in the U.S. and abroad. So he can essentially kind of conduct an auction for his cotton, if you want to look at it that way. But we also, we're very active in cash trading for producers that want to have a bit more hands-on, and we have a thing called PCCA Direct where we can kind of help them position their cotton in the right way and get them custom pricing on that. For producers that have pretty good irrigation and have a pretty good conviction that they can raise a crop, we offer some contract options for them. Certainly the prices are at really good levels right now, but the production outlook is kind of iffy. We only do bale contracts here at PCCA. The reason for that, you would have to, again, just look out your window and know that conditions are dry. And so our bale contracts are something, though, that we have very competitive levels on those. And then lastly, the pool is designed for those that want to have PCCA do the marketing for them, and that is an acre commitment. So the beauty of that is that you're not committed to a certain number of bales. You just deliver the production off those acres, and then we market that cotton, all that cotton together across the year, and look for the best opportunities to do that, and then we pay an average return out to all the growers.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
This inflation issue that we're all hammered with.
Minority leader from the Senate, also member of the Senate Ag Committee from Kentucky, Mitch McConnell.
In a rural state like mine, and a lot of the members of this committee have similar states, small business and family farms are getting hit at both ends. In every single conversation I've had with farmers in the last year, the burden of increased input costs has been right in the forefront. Have you worked with your colleagues across the administration to inform them how this regulatory onslaught is contributing to the burdens the farmers already have?
McConnell's question directed to Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack, testifying before the committee.
Our focus at USDA is to try to figure out ways in which we can provide assistance and help on the number of issues that you've raised. First of all, we are looking at ways in which we can increase productive land going into production. Obviously, as Senator Bozeman indicated, supply does have a tendency, if you expand it, it has a tendency to help bring costs down and potentially increase income. Secondly, in terms of the fertilizer, there are a number of things that we're doing. We are working with farmers to make sure that they are fully aligned with the right application, the right time, the right location, the right amount. We have also provided a new risk management tool that encourages a split application of nitrogen to reduce the cost to farmers. With picking up the loss of productivity that may occur if they are unable to fertilize twice in a year. We also have allocated $500 million towards looking at a broad array of options in terms of how we might be able to expand fertilizer capacity in this country and not be as reliant and as reliant as we have been on outside sources for fertilizer. And we're also looking at a number of strategies in terms of ways in which we can better utilize precision agriculture to ensure that we are using fertilizer in the appropriate time and appropriate amount. So there's a series of things that we're doing. We're also, and I would only finish by saying, part of our responsibility is also to provide help and assistance to the families that, as you mentioned, are struggling. That's the reason why it's important to get the SNAP program where it is. It's important to continue to promote the WIC bonus buy that we have in our budget. It's appropriate to take a look at ways in which we can help our schools deal with the consequences of all of this. That's why we asked for a continuation for one more year of universal free school meals. We think that there are a number of ways in which we can provide help and assistance to families get through this difficult time.
Issue brought up by New Mexico Senator Ben Ray Lujan, where a Clovis, New Mexico dairy producer lost his milk and herd due to contaminated groundwater.
First of all, as you know, we inherited a rule that would not have allowed for a reimbursement for the value of the cow. And in fact, what was done was basically pay for the milk that was contaminated. And we continued to do that until we finally realized that really what we had to do was to actually pay for the cow. So dairies have received significant amount of resources, in some cases millions of dollars of resources, for the milk that was contaminated. We're using the livestock indemnity program structure, which basically provides for the way in which this the valuation is calculated. The difference between that and the livestock indemnity program is that instead of 75% of the value, we're awarding 100% of the value. And we also made a decision to allow for reimbursement of cattle even before the rule that were contaminated, even before the rule was in place. So we think we've taken three steps: providing compensation for the milk, 100% of the loss, as well as covering cows that were contaminated before the rule was put into place, which we think is a fair and reasonable allocation of resources and fairness to the dairy industry in your state.
Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
For those of you who do not know me well, I represent Indiana's 4th Congressional District, the largest ag district in an already ag-heavy state.
Dr. Jim Baird, a member of the House Ag Committee, testifying recently before a House Appropriations Subcommittee on Ag.
I am a PhD animal scientist and a farmer myself. So needless to say, I have a great passion for serving our nation's farmers and ranchers and providing the tools needed to keep America's food system healthy, affordable, and stable. The first initiative that I'd like to call your attention to is increasing the funding and the direction for FDA's Center for Veterinary Medicine for evaluation and approval of animal food ingredients. Animal food manufacturers are researching and bringing to market innovative feed ingredients that can improve animal nutrition, health, and production, and also make food safer and reduce the industry's environmental footprint. They are able to do this because regulatory schemes elsewhere in the world have kept pace with the evolving science of animal nutrition. Unfortunately, our farmers and ranchers in the United States are missing out on using these same ingredients due to the Food and Drug Administration's outdated way of regulating these products and the restrictions on how they are marketed. By hiring more staff, improving the infrastructure and regulatory processes, and providing IT assistance, the FDA's Center for Veterinary Medicine would be able to alleviate long existing backlogs and delays for animal feed ingredient reviews, as well as providing the center with the capacity needed to focus on these emerging needs in regulation of important products. With this in mind, I request the committee provide $5 million in funding for the CBM for needed improvements in timeless and prompt process.
Dr. Baird was one of three members who testified before the subcommittee.
Amongst all the tremendously important projects, I'd like to call attention to you few that I feel are particularly valuable. ARS research activities not only increase commodity yields and disease resistance, but also ensure that American consumers continue to have abundant and affordable access to milled grain products to meet nutritional needs. I urge the committee to increase ARS genetic oat research funding by $1.5 million in fiscal year 23 and continue to fund the U.S. Wheat and Barley Scab Initiative at the fully authorized amount of $15 million.
Also speaking on behalf of Ag, Dr. Kim Schreier from Washington.
Within NEFA, funding for the Research Facilities Act will support competitive grants to land-grant universities and non-land-grant colleges of agriculture for facility construction, acquisition, modernization, renovation, or remodeling. And these facilities need it. Without specific investment in the facilities, many from the 1950s and 1960s, the U.S. really risks its competitiveness and its ability to properly recruit and train the next generation of world-class researchers. Modern ag research and education facilities serve as the backbone of our nation's cutting-edge ag and food research enterprise, but 69% of research facilities at U.S. colleges are really at the end of their useful life. Some don't even have indoor plumbing. That's why we need to address our deferred research maintenance backlog and increase investments in the next generation of ag research work. This investment will reposition the United States for long-term success, competitiveness, and leadership in global ag and food research.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
The next phase in popping up pop-up cargo container storage sites at the ports of Oakland, Seattle, and Tacoma are now underway. Agricultural companies and cooperatives can now submit applications for the Commodity Container Assistance Pilot Program.
We're going to provide $125 per container payment to help reimburse ag product owners to get the logistics worked out of getting their product into these containers. We're also going to offer payments of $200 per container for dry containers and $400 per container for the refrigerated shipping containers.
That's Farm Service Agency Administrator Zach Ducheneau. His agency oversees the pilot program, designed to help relieve congestion and address capacity issues within some of our nation's ports. Applications can be sent via email to FSA's national office. The address is sm.fpac.fsa.ccap@usda.gov. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.